What's up, Beardos? You're listening to episode 217 of The Bearded Vegans.
Basically, our whole philosophy boils down to don't be a jerk.
Let me answer your question first. I'm not answering your question. I really hope people didn't tune in to hear us talk about beards.
Welcome to the show. I'm Paul.
And I'm Andy.
And we are The Bearded Vegans, a podcast featuring a dissection of all things vegan.
If you're just tuning in for the first time, you can find all of our previous episodes at thebeardedvegans.com. You can always reach us by emailing thebeardedvegans@gmail.com.
In today's mini episode, we're going to ask the question, is disrupting Bernie Sanders a win for animals?
Now, dear listener, if you're checking your calendar, no, this is not 2016, in which we could have had this almost exact same episode. Bernie Sanders continues to be disrupted in the name of the animals. So we're going to dig all into that. And Paul, this is a mini episode, so we're not doing any news. We're not doing any food. We're not doing follow up. But I will say we do have one quick announcement.
Yeah, we're not fudging around at all, Andy. But our quick announcement is that we have the mailbag is coming around the mountain. In three short episodes, we got our mailbag episode. And that means you got to send in those mailbag questions right now because, you know, we'll be putting that together soon. We say no question too big or too small. But today, I'm asking for those medium questions, Andy. Give me those good medium questions.
I am looking forward to seeing how all the Beardos interpret a medium question request.
And of course, also a mailbag episode means that we have our review contest. So if you leave a review for our podcast, preferably a 5-star, but you know, we appreciate honesty as well, either on iTunes or Stitcher, or I don't believe Spotify does reviews, but if there's any other place where you're getting reviews, please let us know. But if you leave a review, and it has to be a comment review so we can see your username, we'll pick three people who have left reviews and send you some Bearded Vegan swag. So that's also happening on the mailbag episode. Andy, do you have anything else about the
Well,
the
I do contest? Think we would be remiss if we did not say, if you want to send us those questions, thebeardedvegans@gmail.com is the email in which to send them.
It's a good idea, Andy. Good idea to let them know how to contact us.
Please don't send them via Instagram DM because they will be lost immediately. All right, Paul, let's get into it. This is something that at least vegan Facebook and Twitter has been blowing up about. So, of course, we're going to weigh in because a lot of people are saying, hey, how are y'all feeling about this? So this is the incident. It happened on Sunday, February 16th in Carson City, Nevada, at a Bernie Sanders rally. And for those international listeners out there, the United States, we're in the primary season right now. We're ramping up to a very large presidential election. And so all the candidates are out there doing their thing. And Bernie Sanders is giving a speech in Nevada because the Nevada primary is coming right up. And he was about to take the stage when this happened.
Bernie, I'm your biggest supporter, and I'm here to ask you to stop propping up the dairy industry and to stop propping up the animal.
And so, Paula, it sounds a little chaotic. So just to really spell it out for everybody, Bernie is on stage and a protester gets up, tries to grab the microphone from Bernie's hand. Bernie goes, mm-mm-mm, and pulls it away. But then the protester goes to a second microphone on the podium and says into it, Bernie, I'm your biggest supporter and I'm here to ask you to stop propping up the dairy industry. I believe in you. And that's when the microphone gets cut off. While this is happening, two other protesters get up on stage topless. They have "Let Dairy Die" written on their, you know, their bare chest and stomach. And they're pouring what I'm assuming is supposed to be blood, but it looks more like pink milk, essentially, which I guess could say is like a mixture of blood and milk. That's probably what they're going for, out of some milk cartons onto their heads. And of course, security very quickly gets on stage and whisks everybody off stage. And in the background, a banner is attempting to get unfurled. And there's a couple other people kind of parading by holding like smaller signs as well. Did I miss anything, Paul?
Andy, you know I would have gotten you if you forgot that banner in the background.
This is true. So, the whole thing lasts, what, like maybe a minute and a half at most?
Yeah.
And then Bernie gets back on stage after the chaos and just sort of leads right back into it by saying this. And then that was it, Paul. And we're like, oh, wow, that's something we can talk about. But before we got a chance to record, a very similar disruption happened the next night in California. So, Paul, this is apparently going to become a trend, and we want to dive all into it. I think, Paul, to have this discussion, for me at least, I think there's kind of two major questions to revolve the conversation around. First of which is, like, why choose Bernie Sanders? Like, is Bernie a good strategic target? Is Bernie likely to hear out their demands? And we'll talk about what their demands and goals are in a second. And the other one is, was it successful? And I think there's probably a couple different metrics we can judge that by. But maybe let's start with this first one here. Like, why Bernie Sanders? Bernie is notably very anti-factory farming. And so I think some people might say, well, he's not vegan. He doesn't propose a vegan platform, but isn't he sort of the best we could even ask for in a race like this? So why do you think they targeted Bernie Sanders?
Well, Andy, you know, I think even though he's anti-factory farming, he does have, Andy, neither you nor I are, you know, political experts at all. I'm sure there's people out there that are much more knowledgeable about this than we are. But I believe he does have the history of supporting like the local farms and the local farmers, you know, like supporting. That's, I feel like that's wrapped up in his identity of like support the people. And that's kind of his MO. So it's like, even though, yes, he's anti-factory farming, he's certainly not anti-farming. And I think, people who maybe either were involved in this disruption or are supportive of the disruption are quick to point out, you know, it's like that Bernie Sanders helped to pass some bill that did help out smaller dairy farms. So I think, you know, maybe the people who are behind this believe that since he is more of a, you know, a progressive leaning candidate, that they would have a shot at changing his mind versus someone who is just, you know, on the other side, who is like all about the corporations, all about the factory farms, who is much less likely probably receiving money from said corporations and factory farms and industries. So, who's not going to change their mind at all. Maybe they were like, this is someone who we already kind of support in terms of the other stuff that he's doing. Let's try to get him on board with this thing that we really care about as well.
Yeah. And I think that is sort of borne out in the press release that this group put out afterwards. And I get, Paul, we've talked about Direct Action Everywhere, DXE, so many times in this podcast. And for like new listeners that are joining us might not be privy to the fact that it's not a group that we particularly support. They certainly we have had our issues and our gripes with their activism, but they also have just sort of a history of alleged abuse that makes it really hard to support them. And it's almost hard for me to ever discuss their actions because it almost like legitimizes an organization that I feel like shouldn't be seen as legitimate just based off of like the leadership issues that they have. But, you know, obviously they're not the only ones that are doing this type of disruption. So we can use this incident to talk about this type of thing in a more general sense, even though we are going to have to sort of touch on DXE and their general philosophy of activism a little bit in this. But to get back to following up on what you were saying, there is a piece over at Vox called "The Topless Protesters Disrupting Bernie Sanders Rallies Explained," in which they do have some words from a DXC representative. So let me just read from that, because I think it definitely kind of confirms your suspicion. Why go after Sanders? A majority of DXC activists are Sanders supporters. DXC Representative Matt Johnson told me he even canvassed for Sanders, but they blame Sanders for supporting legislation that would subsidize the struggling dairy industry, for hiring Ben & Jerry's Ben Cohen as a campaign co-chair while DXC has criticized practices at Ben & Jerry's farms, and for brushing off requests for a platform that addresses animal agriculture. So yeah, Paul, it does feel like, I mean, specifically the dairy issue is linked to Bernie. I mean, Vermont, where he is a senator, is a very agriculturally based state. It obviously is. I don't know if they, you know, like they're where they stand on like the amount of milk they produce, but I feel like in the image of Vermont, cows are like just a part of that image. Ben and Jerry's is a part of that image. So symbolically, even in addition to all the legislation that Sanders has supported that does prop up the dairy industry, it does feel like symbolically he is an appropriate target to go after if you are trying to target like subsidies and bills and whatnot that prop up the dairy industry. And Paul, to me, it almost kind of feels like the thing that we have, you know, we've struggled with before, which is essentially you want, like, as vegans, we get like the most upset at people that are like vegetarian or like so close to being vegan, almost more than some of the people that are just like the, you know, members of the Cattlemen's Association or something. And I think it's that feeling that, oh, you're so close to where I want you to be, and why don't you just align? Why don't you just click over that final 10%? And it almost kind of feels like that, because I think you're right that if they were to target, say, Donald Trump to do this, there's no way in hell Donald Trump would move on it. But maybe there's the potential that Bernie Sanders could move on it. I think that could potentially be the mindset.
Andy, I also think there might be something to this, that why target Bernie Sanders? Because not only he is like a potential to change his mind about these things, and we can talk about why he may or may not strictly because of the timing of this anyways, but like not just him, but the people who support him are maybe also going to be more likely to change their minds about these things as well. Because, you know, I don't think if the sole goal was to change Bernie Sanders' mind, like, I don't think the like topless protesters is the thing that they're like, what does Bernie Sanders, like, what's going to change his mind? Like, oh, we just need to throw some topless people at him. That's going to change his mind. Like, clearly there was more to it than just, we want to change Bernie Sanders' mind. It was also, we want to change other people's minds as well. So maybe also they chose Bernie Sanders because they thought his supporters are also more likely to change their mind about these things comparatively.
Well, Paul, I think that's actually a perfect segue to sort of talk about the other big question, which was, in addition to why target Bernie Sanders, but was this action successful? How could it be successful? And really, I guess to define success, you have to define what the goals of the disruption are. And yeah, it's like the first one, it seems obvious that one would say, well, they're trying to influence Bernie Sanders. Like, that's what the press release is based around. That's what, you know, the plea on the microphone was, Bernie, please stop doing this thing. Like, it seems like, okay, that must be goal number one. But as you point out, like, to me, the context in which you have a conversation with someone really matters. And there's almost no room for any sort of productive, constructive conversation in that disruption type atmosphere. Like, it's hard to imagine that in and of itself could change Bernie's mind.
Yeah. So this Vox article that you read a little bit from before, I feel like it does a really good job at being unbiased in presenting kind of, oh, here's what happened, and here's why here's why DXC said that they did it, and here's their reasonings behind it, and here's like a couple people presenting the other side about why that's not effective. But I think, Andy, you know, something that we always are championing is like having constructive conversations. And like, we believe that that's the thing that's going to change people's minds, is not necessarily just like yelling at someone or yelling information or facts at someone, but giving the other person the chance to talk and then responding to those things in like a genuine manner. And certainly this form of disruption not only is it not like constructively beginning any sort of conversation, at least in that moment, but also I think a big thing that we often critique about these sorts of things is that there's not really a clear message, I guess, or there's not really like a clear end goal for people who are seeing this thing. Because if you do watch the video, you'll kind of see, you know, the person gets 1.5 sentence in before the microphone is cut off. The other people are kind of trying to unfurl these banners, but then the security kind of ushers those people off before the banners get unfurled. So it's not really, I believe for the, a lot of the people that were at the rally that weren't protesters, they probably knew that it was something having to do with animals, but they were probably just like, oh, these are just, a lot of people were probably like, oh, this is PETA doing some PETA stuff about animals, you know, like, oh, they're just protesting animal. Like, I feel like a lot of people probably didn't get that they were trying to target one very specific thing, which is just the dairy industry, and that's it. Or just drinking dairy and like cow's milk in general, or specifically rather. So I think, you know, and I don't know if there, well, actually, Andy, I'll say this. I was about to say, I don't know if there is a way to do something like this and get an effective, like concise, achievable message across. But I think, Andy, do you know what I'm going to say? The example of something that we have seen where that did happen.
Yeah. I mean, those Australian protests that we covered, I think we did 2 episodes on those sometime last year, if I recall correctly. I know one of the episodes was called What Went Down in Australia, and the other one was something along the lines of, is disrupting traffic a win for animals, I believe. And the you know, say whatever you want about the protests, the one thing that they were very effective at was telling the public, basically anyone that sees any pictures of this thing, that what they want you to do is to watch the film Dominion, and that you know the address, like the website address, to do so. And Paul, I do want to talk about the clarity of the message, but before we sort of lose the thread of the goals of this type of action, I do want to offer a counter to the idea that they're trying to change Bernie's mind, and they're like trying to change hearts and minds, that whole thing. Do you think it's possible, because they've stated they're going to keep doing this until Bernie like moves on this issue, that the goal is not to change anyone's mind, but to simply just make it such a hassle for him to conduct his presidential campaign that he'll have no choice but to go, fine, I'm giving into this because I want you to just like leave me alone, which is, in my mind, that's like the only way that really disruptive types of techniques work. Like, they don't work to make someone change their views on a specific cause or issue. They work in getting someone to say, fine, I didn't need to go to this steakhouse, or fine, I didn't need to invest in this small piece of my portfolio, and my life will be so much better if I just back away from this thing or drop this, you know, pharmaceutical testing company from my portfolio, whatever it might be. Do you think that is the potential end game?
Andy, do I believe that that's what they're planning? Like, no, I don't think that that's what, like, necessarily that's what they're planning. And I think that if it is, I don't know if that type of tactic is appropriate for this specific situation, because like, I think it is vastly different if you were employing that tactic against a specific restaurant, say, rather than a politician. Like, I feel like for a politician to change their mind because of like a vast minority group that's kind of, you know, troublesome every once in a while or bothering them every once in a while. That's more of like an annoyance. I don't believe that they would be able to disrupt enough to change his mind, especially because I feel like Bernie Sanders is a politician who's known for like really sticking to what he believes. And even though, you know, in this case, it's like, I don't agree with him on supporting small farms, small dairy farms, even though I don't agree with him on that. Like, he's someone who I feel like believes in what he believes because he's thought it through. So I don't think like annoyances like this are going to be something that changes his mind. And I do think, though, that sort of tactic could possibly work, not like exactly the same thing, but like the disruption thing could work instead to change like a restaurant's to change a restaurant menu item or something like that, because that's the sort of thing where it's like, okay, you're disrupting it enough that now they're losing money or something like that, or it's being annoying to the customers and there's less customers coming in. And like, that's the sort of thing that I feel like a disruption could possibly actually make some changes, even though, Andy, we've seen like some of that stuff play out before. I remember there was a story we talked about forever ago that was outside of like a butcher shop or something. There was a disruption for like months, and then like the climax of it was like the butcher shop was like, fine, I'm gonna put out a sign that says like, hey, we sell meat here and meat is bad or something like that. And then it was like this, I feel like, a very long campaign and then a very anticlimactic achievement. Not to say that I don't think this sort of thing could never work. I just think it's not going to work in that way in this situation with Bernie.
Well, Paul, yes. The sign read, animals' lives are their right. Killing them is violent and unjust no matter how it is done. And they kind of have it up in this, you know, small corner of a window that doesn't look like it's near the door or anything like that. But yes, I think that you hit on something very important, which is when you said that essentially you don't think that Bernie would change his position on this because it is a very, very vocal minority that is asking for this. And obviously, like, one activist group is going to be a minority no matter what. But even if you just think of like vegans as a whole, you know, and we see all these polls that are like, oh, vegans are, you know, 5% of the U.S. population, things like that. And we, you know, we've discussed how we think a lot of those are overblown. But like, honestly, even if you accept that 5% of the U.S. eats plant-based food, what percentage of those people are actually people that are for the liberation of all beings? They're not just on a diet. They're, you know, like, they actually fully believe in that. It's such a small amount that it's not enough people. It's not like Bernie's like getting some big win by winning over those people who, as even DXC admits in this Vox piece, are already going to vote for Bernie, that already are supporters of Bernie. Like, he almost stands to gain nothing. And I would argue that what he stands to lose is potentially significant. I mean, I don't know. It'd be hard to imagine with everything else he has going for him that if he was like, by the way, I think we should abolish the dairy industry, that would lose him a huge percentage of his core support. But it doesn't feel like it's the type of thing that would really endear him to any significant portion of the population. You know, and so essentially what they're asking him to do is adopt a stance and a policy that is counter to what generously 95% of Americans, you know, agree with, or something like that. You know, even people, like, everyone's drinking almond milk and all that, but I bet even the good amount of the people that are not vegan and drink dairy alternatives, they're probably still opposed to the government, like, you know, destroying an industry or something like that, or like mandating you can't drink milk anymore.
Andy, that's actually one of the, like, I feel like when I've seen people posting about this, even the vegans, because most of the vegans that I've seen post about this posted about it disfavorably. And one of the main, I guess, critiques that I've seen people see is like, well, of course he's not going to, like, or even people saying he's like, you shouldn't be doing this right now because if he did change his mind about this thing, like, it would hurt him in the polls, and we really need him, like, to beat Trump and all that jazz. And so I think I disagree with you that it wouldn't be that big of a deal. I think that, like, if he did make that change and he ended up, like, becoming the Democratic candidate and going against Trump, I think that that would be something that Trump latched onto to attack him specifically for, to be like, Bernie doesn't support farmers. And but that said, like, again, Bernie Sanders, he is still a politician, but I feel like comparatively to most other politicians that I am familiar with, like, he seems to be the one that actually does the things that he believes in, even if they aren't the most favorable. Now, I don't think he's going to do something that's disfavorable. And this might be something that's disfavorable. So I don't know. Even if he did believe in this, he still might not change his policy on it just because he knows that it would hurt him.
Yeah, and I guess I should clarify. I guess what I was trying to say was, I don't think that the people that are currently ride or die for Bernie would ditch him if he ditches dairy. But I do agree, Paul, that I think a lot of the people that are maybe less firm on him, or, you know, swing voters, which I don't know, I just read a really interesting piece saying swing voters don't really exist, but, you know, like, people that could go either way. I don't know how there could be anybody, if it comes down to Bernie and Trump, which, God, I hope it does. But, like, you know, who's like in the middle that's like, gosh, I just don't know. Like, who, you know, I got to hear both these guys out. You know, like, it seems silly to me. But I guess what I'm saying is that, yeah, I do think that he's not going to lose his core supporters over it. But there's a lot of, like, the periphery people that he could. And that is 100%, 1000% a great point, Paul, that is something that Trump would exploit in the campaign. I think not even so much like he's against the farmers, but, like, you know, like, Trump's whole thing is like sort of pandering to the disappearing white majority kind of thing. And that's just sort of like an extension of that, like, oh, now they want to make you all a bunch of hippie, like, vegans and stuff like that. And he really, you know, he panders to that, like, you know, remember when you could just, like, say whatever the hell you wanted to say and didn't have to worry about the PC, all that stuff. And certainly, I think that he could easily spin it as if Bernie not supporting the dairy industry was, like, an extension of that. Now, of course, there's, like, the middle ground where Bernie could be like, it's not my platform that I'm anti-dairy, but I could just quietly stop supporting and proposing bills that prop up dairy, which is probably the most realistic thing that one could ask for at this point.
Yeah, no, for sure. I don't think that would be unreasonable at all. And Andy, you know, it's like, I don't think that as far as I know, and I could be wrong about this, it's like the propping up the small dairy farmers doesn't seem like the thing that Bernie Sanders represents. Like, when I think about the things that he's championing, that doesn't come to mind. Now, that doesn't mean that he's not doing it, but it's not, like, part of his identity, I guess, you know?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I agree that it is not, if someone was like, give me the top, like, five things that Bernie represents to you, I don't think the dairy industry would be the thing that 99 out of 100 people would say.
Now, Andy, this is a good conversation that we're having about, you know, it's like, would he actually change his mind and all that stuff? Like, would it be a good political move? But I know that DXC and people who are in favor of this would argue none of that matters because it's still the right thing to be fighting for. So we should be fighting for it, even if it's not, like, the best, you know, quote unquote, the best time, which is some of the counter argument that, like I said, I've seen people making. That, like, the counter argument would be, well, there's no right time or wrong time to be fighting for animal rights.
Yeah. I mean, so, Paul, neither you nor I are professional political pundits or experts or anything like that. I will say that, like, my personal position on this is that what Bernie Sanders advocates for is, like, listen, I don't trust any politician. I don't look at politicians as our saviors. I don't look at voting as the be all end all of the political process. But I think it is they're a tool in the toolbox. They are part of the fight. And certainly you want to get the most favorable political landscape possible in which for people to do activism. And my personal opinion is that if Bernie gets into office, the things that he is fighting for will make it easier to fight for the liberation of all beings. And that goes from everything from advocating for like the abolition or the at least ending subsidies for factory farms, even though it's all animal use is the problem. It's not just factory farms. And like, I want to get that clear. But also, like, if Medicare for all, if that is something that can become a reality, think about the burden that relieves so many activists from. You know, like we talked about this in our self-care and burnout episodes, that it's very hard to advocate for others when you're spending all your time advocating for yourself. And that could include fighting, insurance companies. It could include fighting illnesses, whatever it might be related to like medical issues. And thinking about freeing people up from that burden and making it easier for people to fight for justice of all beings. I think if you're looking at the bigger picture, if you're looking at the long strategic end game, that 100% the best possible candidate we could get in terms of the mainstream candidates that actually have a chance of making it to the election. Because obviously you could concoct or point to some example of some like amazing, like total liberation advocate politician, something like that. But as far as people that actually have a chance to get the thing, I fully believe that Bernie Sanders is the candidate that gets us another step on the path to our goal of total liberation. And it seems like to me, it's like, so we should be doing everything we can to get him in, right? And if I believe that him taking a hard stance against dairy is going to make him less electable, then to me it's like, oh, well, it's not necessarily saying that this issue is not important, but it's saying that strategy is important. And knowing when to drop certain tactics and when to drop certain issues is important. But Paul, I also agree with your counter argument, which is... that is a line that we hear throughout history that's like, you have to wait your turn, trying to ease into this thing. We just got our foot in the door and you're asking for too much. And so it feels gross for me to be like taking that position, like I'm just like, no, there's not a wrong time to advocate for justice, right?
But Andy, I also think though that it's like not advocating animal rights to Bernie Sanders is different than telling Bernie Sanders to like continue exploiting animals. You know, it's like there are plenty of people we could be advocating to, whether it's a specific person for a specific reason, or just like the leafleting or something, the general public trying to have conversations with friends and family, all those sorts of things. It's like there are plenty of people who we could be advocating to, and it's not like, if we choose not to advocate to a specific person, we're not advocating the opposite of what we believe to that person. You know, it's not like not telling Bernie Sanders is the same as telling Bernie Sanders, hey, keep exploiting, keep funding the dairy industry and stuff like that. So yeah, I get why it seems gross, but at the same time, it's like, it's not Bernie Sanders or nothing. It's Bernie Sanders or plenty of other options of people or tactics we could be employing.
Yeah. And I mean, and also perhaps these types of disruptions, even though they don't reach their goal though, maybe they can sort of push the issue on the table and make it more of a thing. Like, is that also like, even if we don't expect him to capitulate to those demands, that it at least puts the issue on the table and that it would be irresponsible to not put the issue on the table? Or do you still think that that could do harm?
I don't know, Andy, I'm not Bernie Sanders. This may be come as a surprise to you.
But you do such a good Bernie Sanders impression.
I'm not even going to try because I've literally never tried in my entire life and it would be awful. But I'm once again asking you for something.
I did see a great meme earlier today that was like, you know, the I don't always do this, but when I do, like,
yeah,
that thing. It was Bernie Sanders, and it said, I don't always comb my hair, but when I do, I use a balloon. Anyway,
nice.
Now that I've derailed you, now that I've disrupted you, Paul.
Oh, I've... Yeah. Like, Andy, what I was saying was, maybe these two disruptions have put it on his... put these thoughts in his mind. For all I know, I don't know. But... To me, it doesn't seem like it's the most effective way that it's going to get him to change his mind about thing. And now, of course, to be fair, according to the Vox article, like since the 2016 time when DXC disrupted him, they've been trying to contact him to talk to him about these sorts of things. And he hasn't responded to it. And now they've done this again. So it's not like this is according to them, it's not like this is the only thing that they're doing to try to have this conversation, but it just seems like it's like, okay, we're either going to like send a message or send a letter, make phone calls and be like, hey, can we have a conversation about this? Oh no. Okay. We're going to go topless and pour fake blood on ourselves at your disruption. It's like, there has to be an in between, or even it's like, it doesn't mean just because one didn't work, we have to go to that other extreme, I would say. And maybe it's like, okay, he's not going to have these conversations with us, but maybe someone else will, you know. I guess I'm falling back on the same idea that I was saying before, where it's like, it doesn't need to be him. And I guess, you know, we've already talked about, maybe there are some reasons why he is a good person to try to push for this, but I don't think he's not the only person.
Yeah. I mean, he's the guy that's leading the polls and, you know, has the spotlight on him. So obviously disrupting him stands to garner the most media attention, which I think is the other motivation that we have not talked about yet. And one could likely say is actually the ultimate goal of this, which is simply to get media coverage. I mean, like this type of stunt, the half nude bodies and the bloody, you know, pouring on yourself, that all of that, as you pointed out earlier, anyone would be totally fair to assume that that was a PETA stunt, right? And the PETA school of activism is do something controversial, understand that it doesn't, you know, quote unquote, make vegans look good, or that it's not going to win anybody over in the moment, but that it is going to get lots of headlines, and those headlines are going to have links to PETA, and people are going to go to PETA's website and watch their videos and then go vegan. Like that is PETA's strategy with those types of stunts. Like, they don't actually think that a lot of what they do is going to reach people in that moment. Like Paul, I was thinking about that. Was it the Warhammer 40,000 thing where they're protesting the plastic fur on the figurines or something like that? And you're like, it's so ridiculous.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, clearly this campaign is just to get a bunch of nerds to go look at the PETA website.
Myself included.
And so it feels like DXC is taking a page out of that playbook, and they're measuring their success purely by the media coverage that they get, which of course begs the question. Well, I guess let me just say, I, you know, did go look through the news, and yes, it was covered in lots of outlets. We could talk about how it was covered shortly, but like, you know, they're basically operating off the assumption that all press is good press.
Yeah, and you know, the Vox article points that out and points out that DXC and PETA are both kind of that attitude that all press is good press. The Vox article also points out that there's really no studies that show that that's actually true, but there are also very few studies that would point that it's not true. You know, it's like there's just not very many studies on whether that's something that's effective or not. I guess, Andy, to us, intuitively, it seems like it's not super effective. That's my I guess it's my opinion because I don't have studies to back it up. It seems like it's not effective. Now, I will say, you know, I read through some of the comments on the YouTube video of this event. And of course, there was just like people on both sides kind of saying some nasty things to each other. And then there would be like one or two occasional things that kind of indicated to me that it was someone that probably wasn't like super against dairy to begin with, and people saying things that made it seem like they had maybe thought about it a little bit more, to the credit of the protest, I guess. But at the same time, those people were responding to other comments of people who, you know, were saying like, this is the thing that they were trying, these are the points that they're trying to get across, and this is why they did this, and this is why they did this. And again, I know we already kind of touched upon this point, so we don't need to talk about it again, but I don't think it was not the act itself that prompted this person's change of heart, is alleged change of heart, I guess. It was like another conversation that was started because of this. And of course, DXC would say that's the point, but I feel like it shouldn't, when vegans are such a minority in the population, it shouldn't fall on, the burden shouldn't fall 100% on like other people picking up the slack of the actual action itself to be like, oh no, this is why they did it. And this is why, you know, this is why you should change your mind about dairy. Because actions like these, Andy, I feel like, especially, you know, I'll tie it into the media thing, especially with all the, you know, like neutral to negative media attention that it does get, like the burden falls completely on other vegans to kind of be like, to have to like explain to their coworkers when their coworkers and peers and friends inevitably bring it up and are like, hey, did you hear about these wackos over here? And you have to be like, well, yeah, well, I don't agree with them, but I do agree with the message that they're kind of trying to get towards. And you know, it kind of falls on you to pick up those pieces. And I feel like that's an effective action, shouldn't leave you having to be like, well, no, I don't, like, you know, backstepping a couple steps just so then you can make forward progress.
Yeah, and I think that point is especially salient with groups that have such a small percentage of the population. And that does, like, we had that interview with Alex Felsinger that was kind of talking about this, that, like, there's certain points, like, once you reach a certain saturation point within a population, then these types of stunts become more effective because there's enough representatives out there to have those conversations. And that like sort of does lend itself to the theory that perhaps waiting can be more beneficial than not waiting, and that doing things prematurely, we'll drop a link to the article that Alex wrote all about this, but you know, doing it prematurely actually can hurt the cause more so than help it. And so, yeah, certainly vegans are such a small minority, and just based off of my anecdotal evidence, like, you're right, Paul, there's very little scientific studies or evidence or whatever that make you conclude on either side of this argument. But anecdotally, it certainly seems like most vegans are embarrassed by this type of action and want to like disavow themselves and be like, yeah, even if they're like, I hate dairy, but these, I don't want to be a part of these at all. Like, they don't speak for us. I'm on Team Bernie, whatever. So I guess I agree with that.
As a small side note, though, I guess there are certainly also vegans that would say that about other like direct action groups like the ALF, ones that we are more in support of.
Yeah.
That the people would say like, oh, it's giving vegans a bad name, or people view it negatively.
Yeah. I mean, I guess the counter argument to that, Paul, is that like someone doing something like that is actually saving an animal's life when they do it, as opposed to some stunt that in theory maybe gets some media representation that then gets people to open their hearts and minds.
I would say be careful, Andy, because I think a DXE person would counter that with, well, we also do that stuff as well.
Well, that doesn't you can't be like, I do this one really good thing, so it gives me a carte blanche to do all these other ineffective and counterproductive things. Paul, That's a flimsy argument that you are making on behalf of somebody else.
That's like when PETA does something that we are in favor of, and then we're like, oh, I guess we got to say they did this good thing, but doesn't excuse all the bad things.
So, Paul, I mean, so like on the whole media coverage thing, it seems like the strategy is let's get the media coverage. And then also even admitted to in this Vox piece that it's essentially just to draw attention to the DXE brand. Like they say, DXE uses these events to draw attention to the rest of their work. And I feel like that's just a big problem in this movement now, which is that, or at least in the mainstream animal rights movement, which is that everyone, it's almost more about spreading your brand than it is about doing effective actual work to help animals. And this is, I think, organizations that would probably hate these actions DXE is doing also are guilty of that. Like, you know, even without naming names, I guess, but like you can't think of any group that like does a protest that doesn't have their logo all over it. And, you know, it's like, I don't know. It just feels like it's more about making sure you can get the donations coming in because people recognize your brand attached to a certain type of action, and about making sure your group can keep going, which, you know, obviously everyone's got to make their money. This shit, you know, activism can often cost money, but I don't know. It just feels like we're, as a movement, like not even just DXE, like everyone's kind of falling into this trap of like just like branding over activism, you know, and maybe that's the more cynical view, but it just feels like really, does this really feel strategic? Does this really feel like something that Bernie would actually budge on? I say no. It doesn't feel like in, I want to say a million years, but I feel like in 20 years, well, I don't know how much longer Bernie has, but, you know, like it doesn't feel like the type of thing that is going to garner him much political support. Like even look at someone like Cory Booker, right, who's like the vegan candidate. He still has to adopt the position of, listen, I'm not here to tell you what to do. This is just what works for me. And that's like, I would imagine that's what you have to adopt if you're going to be a politician that is adopting a, I don't know how like animal rights oriented Cory Booker is, I guess, but even someone that's a plant-based diet, you know, it, to me, it just feels like it's obvious this is not something Bernie is going to adopt, and it's purely a media stunt to, one, gain attention for your brand, and two, to get media coverage. But we can talk about the quality of said media coverage unless you have anything else to add to those points.
Tell me about it, Andy.
Okay, Paul, this is, I know we're going predictably long for a mini episode, but you know, I did take some time, went through a lot of like the news results, going through, watching some videos, reading the articles, just see like how was this reported upon. And yes, this stunt predictably got covered in tons of outlets, but the coverage was essentially topless protesters interrupt Bernie Sanders, topless protesters storm the stage at Bernie Sanders rally, etc. You know, obviously, when you lead with nudity like that, it's going to be the thing that makes it enticing to news outlets, but it's also going to be the only thing that they focus on. And I think, as you pointed out earlier, Paul, having a very clear, concise message that anybody can get, even if it's maybe not, I don't understand the full nuance of your argument, but at least here's a website to go to, or here's a phrase to latch on to, like that, to me, that was not accomplished in this. You know, like you have seconds, maybe 30 seconds to like, if not less, to get your point across. And, you know, they had written messages on their bodies, but the hair was covering it. The banner didn't get opened in time. Solely every article, with the exception of like one or two that actually took information from the DXE press release, any notion of their message just came from repeating what the first disruptor said into the microphone. And Paul, what if that microphone wasn't there? What if the mic had gotten cut off right away? Like, is the plan to hope that you have a microphone that works when you do this thing? If your entire disruption and your goal of media coverage and getting some message into it purely relies on a microphone happening to work and not get cut off before you get to it or mid-sentence, to me, that feels like a very poorly executed stunt.
Well, Andy, I want to ask you something about the topless aspect of this, because in the Vox article, which again, I feel like you can correct me if I'm wrong, Andy, because you perused a lot of these other a lot of the other news outlets that did cover this. The Vox article, I think, went the most in depth into the whole situation, but also the most in depth into like, oh, this is people from DXC saying why that they did it. And there's a quote that's for one of the people from DXC, because they were asked like, doesn't this objectify women? And the person was like, yes, it objectifies women. And that's the point, because we're trying to point towards the fact that it's milk is objective. Dairy objectifies the cow. And I was like, I'm not going to like, if that was in fact the plan, okay, I don't, but to me, that just seems like an afterthought about like, we know we're going to be asked this question. Let's make up something for why we did this, because that doesn't like, I don't think anyone got that message, that's the message that they were trying to promote. I don't think that they did anything to get that message out there. Maybe. And you know, it's like, I'm not like, I don't want to do it. Like if that was the message that they were trying to get out there, I'm not necessarily saying like, hey, you people shouldn't be doing that message. Cause I don't think that's my place to say whether or not like we should be promoting that message. But I think that was, to me, it seems like an afterthought. And if it wasn't, Andy, you can tell me if I'm wrong, but it doesn't seem like any news outlet was promoting that as the idea that they were trying to get across. And like, certainly because that's not the idea that they were trying to get across, it then just becomes, oh, it's just objectification of women. It's not objectification of women for this grander reason that they had, because even they admit it was objectification of women, DXC that is, even they admit it, that they were saying it was just for a bigger cause.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you know, this conversation is tricky. Like, obviously, we're not here to tell people what to do with their bodies. But, Paul, I say this all the time. I guess that could be a whole other episode or some interesting interview at some point. But to me, it kind of feels like, okay, so the analogy is the exploitation of the protesters' bodies is analogous to the exploitation of cows. And then what? Like what further thought does that lead to? Is it supposed to inspire people that see it to go, oh, I think this is bad, and therefore what happens to the cows is like, it doesn't feel like, even if one could, and many people certainly do, make those analogies or comparisons or talk about the roots of the oppression of all of them, it doesn't feel like it's well thought out beyond that, you know? And like, to me, even disregarding this conversation about whether it's exploitive or not, it seems like the clear reason why they did that was not because they thought it was some really relevant comparison or connection to make. It was purely because that was what was going to get media coverage. And to me, it seems like, you know, the downside of that is basically the thing that's going to get you the media coverage is also going to be the reason why that media coverage doesn't talk about your message at all.
Yeah. And Andy, I don't know. You could tell me if I'm out of line in saying this, but to me, it seems like if you're going to tell your protesters, if you're going to tell your people that the reason that they're doing that is because they're trying to draw this like grander comparison, this more purposeful comparison, but the real reason is actually just like, oh, this is just going to get us on the news. That seems exploitative.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think that's a reasonable position to take. And Paul, I think the biggest failure of the whole thing is that the vast majority of the pieces that I looked at in news coverage didn't talk about their message, perhaps included the phrase that they're anti-dairy protesters or something. But also, almost none of the news articles I looked at even mentioned the group behind the thing. So it didn't even promote their brand. It didn't point anyone towards a website for the group to go to. Like, you had to really dig to find that stuff. But if you're just Googling, you know, Bernie Sanders disruption or Bernie Sanders dairy, like things like that, the basic things people would look at, it took a while to find anything that had any sort of actual you know, like pulled lines from their press release and everything. So it feels like even from the media stunt perspective, media coverage perspective, it was a failure in that regard. And again, that's why it is so absolutely important to, you know, in any action that we do, to make sure our message is very clear and concise.
I absolutely agree, Andy.
So I don't know, Paul. I mean, in theory, I think it's really important for us to continue to push the candidates that are most in line with our views and values to adopt more progressive values. But it I don't know, just top to bottom, this whole stunt felt very unstrategic.
I'm unsurprised by that.
Even if we strip the implications of the type of activism and the using of bodies and stuff like that, and that leads to a whole other discussion of, is using these exploitations and these oppressions in this way, is that in line with the future that we want to have? Like, is it okay to practice activism in a way that's not in alignment with our values, kind of thing? Even if we remove that conversation entirely, it just feels like every aspect of this was pretty unsuccessful.
Ill thought out and unsuccessful.
And it makes me sad that these disruptions will likely continue to happen, because it feels like such a waste of effort, because it's not something Bernie is going to do. It's not, I mean, I don't know, maybe they're like, oh, we're going to learn from this and have a website that we hold up or something on our signs. But, and would that change our opinion of this thing entirely? I don't know, but it does just, to me, it just feels like a big old failure.
Yeah. And, you know, we're almost an hour in, and I feel like I usually like to say this at the beginning of these conversations, so anyone that would want to hear this is probably already turned off this episode. But I also don't doubt at all the intention of the people who participated in this, that they truly believed that they were doing this because it was the right thing to do.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that they think what they're doing is very strategic. And to me, Paul, that's kind of, it's one of the issues that I've continued to have with DXC, which is that they sort of talk a big game about the reasons why they do the type of activism that they do, and like drawing on all sorts of past social justice movements. But I feel like their analyses of those movements and what made them work and the context and all of that is almost entirely lost on them all the time. So from that Vox article, let me just read this. DXC thinks the evidence is on its side and history will prove it. Quote, protesters are unpopular, but protests are effective nonetheless, right? And so it's like, that is such an oversimplification of activism, and that, you know, DXC is just sort of, they're always playing into this one thing worked, or this thing works, so it will work right now for this specific cause, you know, and it feels like it's lacking of any examination of those aspects of these social justice movements. And I don't know, I see like papers and things being cited all the time in support of the activism they do. But then you go actually look at the papers and you're like, well, actually, it says almost the exact opposite of what you're drawing out of this thing. And so I don't know, just to me, it feels like there's just such a lack of understanding of the place for certain tactics, at which point in a social justice movement they can be employed and effectively, and all of these things. And also understanding that things that work for one specific cause might not work for another specific cause, that contextually those things also matter.
Yeah, Andy, I feel like we need to have an episode in the future that's kind of like, because you had started to bring up the whole brand thing. I feel like we need to have an episode in the future that's like, should we start like dissolving the idea that we need these brands, that we need these big organizations in order to do specific, you know, specific types of actions? Even if we like this one specific type of action that one organization does, do we need to be a part of that group to do those? Or can we just be activists on our own, or like form our own like groups in our local communities? And I believe we probably have a good interview in the chamber just for that thing. So I think this discussion might be coming sooner rather than later.
Yeah, Paul. Wow, that is a great lead into something that we are currently working on, really tying it all together. But of course, dear listener, dear Beardo, We want to know what you have to say about all this. Did you love this action? Did you hate it? Was it like the worst thing you've ever seen in your life? Like, let us know. What did we miss? You know, we always try our best to cover all the different angles of these types of things, but surely we have missed plenty of them. So let us know. You can send us an email to thebeardedvegans@gmail.com, and we very much look forward to hearing from you.
Yeah. Yeah. I would be interested to hear if people had other, because, you know, I think we tried to say like, this is why they did this and this is what they thought it would do and stuff like that. But if people have other like pros about why they believe that this was actually a good thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, please send those in. Andy, you're in LA. It's currently raining right now, which I feel like is a rare thing, right?
Yeah, it rained for all of about 2 minutes, so it has currently stopped. Okay.
And we're back. Can the people find you anywhere?
Yeah, you know, you can actually find me not in California. You can find me in Arizona this coming weekend, because on Leap Day, February 29th, I'll be at the PHX Vegan Fest in Phoenix, Arizona. That's happening from a staggering 12 till 10 at night.
Whoa.
Very long day. Very long day. We'll see. We'll see how long
the
vendors
last.
Out. What's that?
Get that chair out.
Oh, I am so going to be sitting in my chair by 6 o'clock, I'm sure. Then I come back to California the weekend after that. I'm really excited to be returning to First Friday Night Market in San Diego. It's such a fun event I did last time. It was real like chill, great music was playing, good food vendors, really fun event. So I'm excited to return to that. March 21st and 22nd, I'll be at Vegan Street Fair in Los Angeles. The almighty Vegan Street Fair. Stoked. It's going to be bigger and better than ever this year. April 5th, back to San Diego for the San Diego Vegan Festival. April 11th, Santa Cruz Veg Fest, Santa Cruz, California. And April 25th, Paul, I'm breaking new ground. Tulsa Veg Fest in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Oh,
yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, I'm excited for that. I've never done that. I haven't really explored Tulsa all that much in general. So, you know, I guess the wind will be sweeping across the plains and whatnot, but should be a good time. And you can find me behind the Compassion Company table at all of those events. Just go to CompassionCo.com if you want more details. But if you find me, say what's up, Beardo, and I'll hook you up with a Beard Vegans button or sticker.
Andy, as stoked as I am for you to be going to all these cool places, it makes me so sad that you're into April and you're still on the West Coast. And I'm like, please just come back to me, Andy.
God, I really won't be back on the East Coast until June.
Good God.
Well, Paul, we have some late breaking news. Someone sent me footage from another Bernie Sanders rally. And is that you? Paul, is that you storming the stage? You're taking off your shirt. You've written something on your chest. It says the following 7 words.
We are the Bearded Vegans, signing off. Andy, I got a great transition, but I also need to pee so badly. So I'm going to remember this transition in my head, and I'm going to go pee really quickly. It's going to take 2 seconds. I'll be right back.
All right. Paul promised me this peeing was going to take 2 seconds, but it's been much longer.
You talking to me?
No, I would never talk to you. You weren't here.
Wait, can you say something?
I didn't say anything.
Oh, okay. All right. I'll hear about it in the edit.